This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 120. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can phone us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Richard Welch.
So, Richard, you're back again this week. Still no sign of Burners. We've lost contact with him completely now. So it looks like you're going to be a regular on the show if it carries on like this.
It seems that way. Last report of Burners was on the South Island of New Zealand, apparently up to his neck with the Canterbury Cricket Association down there, actually having a good time down there as well. So he continues to travel the world on behalf of Pitch Vision. And hopefully he'll be back gracing the podcast with his dulcet tones and sharing the wonderful experiences he's been having all around the world.
Yeah, they usually involve either drinking or avoiding playing cricket. That seems to be his two pastimes.
Yeah, that seems to be a large part of the exercise.
And boasting about how many runs.
Well, I think the best boasts were, you know, bowling to the West Indies opening batsman and training with the Indian squad in the West Indies only 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then now he's on another part of the world doing something equally interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's a good life for Burners at the moment.
It is, yeah.
We've got some things going on in the world of cricket this week that might be worth talking about. The Big Bash 2020 league in Australia is starting to get exciting after all the talk and controversy around that. So, as an Australian yourself, what do you think of the new format of going to franchises and Australian side signing big name players like Chris Gayle, who signed for Sydney Thunder?
I think it's good. I think it's, you know, I think it's constructive by Cricket Australia to, you know, do something creative, a bit different and inventive, and it's progressive for the game in Australia. For those who don't know, traditionally Australia has always competed along state lines. So for the purpose of the Big Batch 2020 tournaments, they've moved away from state-based to franchise-based. And some of the states have only got one franchise, but a couple of the states have got two franchises. So Melbourne or Victoria has the Melbourne Renegades and the Melbourne Stars. And Sydney has the Sydney Sixers. And the Sydney Thunder. And it's all going to kick off in December, but they're all now busily buying up the players, and it's pretty interesting which players are going where. Sydney Thunder have picked up Dave Warner and Chris Gayle. Now, I'll tell you what, if anything is going to draw people in through the turnstiles to go watch a game of cricket, the prospect of watching Dave Warner and Chris Gayle open the batting at the SCG is a very, very appetising one. So, you know, I think even just on that basis, it's bound to attract good attention for cricket, and that's bound to feed through to more participation in cricket, which is only a good thing.
Well, that's an interesting area for me. How does it all fit together with the more traditional forms of cricket? Because, of course, in the recreational level in Australia, there's a lot of two-day cricket played. So do you think maybe people will be looking at the 2020 stuff and thinking, what's the point in playing a two-day game when I can get it all done in 3 hours?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, in terms of participation numbers, cricket is actually has the highest level of participation in Australia. Cricket is the number one participation sport outside lawn bowls. Which actually, the pensioner population actually even trumped that. But so I don't think it will really have any direct effect on that. What I think it will do is make the game, if 2020 leagues, whether midweek leagues or Sunday leagues or things start to pop up, it'll just make the game that much more accessible for those people who can't play two-day cricket, even if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So I think, and I'm sure a lot of people who play two-day cricket would much prefer playing a 2020 game midweek than going to training.
There isn't a lot of midweek cricket played in Australia, though, as far as I understand it, is that?
No, not like the UK, definitely not. I mean, and that may be because of the stronger training culture in Australia. You know, in Australia, if you don't train, you don't get picked. You know, there is a real emphasis on an onus on the players to, as part of their commitment to the team, to train. But that's a good thing. But it also makes it very hard that if you can't commit both your weekends and your weeknights to training, you don't get to play. So that makes it tricky. But maybe this will introduce a little bit more flexibility into the cricket culture there.
The other thing about 2020 that's been brought up about these 2020 style leagues, the IPL, of course, in similar in India, and England has its quaint, seemingly quaint old 2020 Cup now. It's breeding a certain type of cricketer, and that a certain type of player who is more suited to the longer format is going to vanish from the game. The middle order accumulator, say, or yeah. You know, the bowler who bowls a bit of swing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about losing certain skills as 2020 gets more popular?
I think, like most people, very mixed feelings. On one hand, the game has to evolve and move on.
Mm.
It's because it always has. But so yes, some attributes will be less valued, and therefore the players with those attributes will be less valued. But then other attributes come to the fore. I mean, look, here's the best example. How could you imagine how good fielding has got and what a skill it has become with our 2020 cricket? You can't uninvent 2020 now. It's been invented. But, yes, on the other hand, part of me pines for the... Now, there's nothing like an Ashes series. There's nothing like a India-Australia or a India-Pakistan test match or all those things which the battle is played out on a grand scale. And I hope that the powers to be find a way to make sure that test cricket is safeguarded. But I really do worry because the fundamental economics of the game now suggests that at some point in the future, the TV networks are not going to pay to broadcast Test cricket. And once they do that, how does Test cricket get funded in the first place?
Yeah, because it's so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going back to skills for a minute, I do think it's the doom mongers overrate the loss of certain skills in 2020 cricket, because it was similar when the 40-over league started in the UK in the late 60s. Everyone said, well, you know, it's just a slog. Everyone's just going to smash it across the line all the time. Technique's going to vanish. But if you look then, and if you look even now at the best 2020 batsmen and the best 2020 bowlers, they're the guys who are also the best one-day players and the best test players more often than not.
And frankly, at club level, where you're playing at 50, you're batting 50 overs, or you know, maximum 60 or 70 overs a day. I mean, how much different is it anyway? Really, a good club player in a 2020 match is not much different. Not much different technique to a good club player in a 50 over match or a 100 over match. It's not really.
You just look to score off more balls. You don't look to change your technique fundamentally.
No,
I would say.
And there's lots of, you know, and the new shots that are coming in as a result, as the techniques become more refined and more scientific, you can say, well, actually, it's a very skillful shot.
Yeah.
And it's a legitimate shot. So for every loss of a skill, there's a new skill and a new interesting skill. And sort of proves that the game is going through a creative gale of destruction is the term, where... Everything's being reinvented from the top to the bottom, whether it's how the game is played, the rules of the game, even the equipment you use, how it's televised, how players get paid, who they play for. Everything's being reinvented. Fascinating. It's really fascinating.
It's time now on the Pitch Vision Academy show for our interview section. And this week I'm talking to Rosalie Birch, who's a former women's international cricketer who's now working with the Chance to Shine project. How's it going, Rosalie?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, very good.
Excellent. So for those of us who don't know, can you tell me a little bit about what Chance to Shine is?
Chance to Shine, supported by Brit Insurance, is the Cricket Foundation's charitable campaign to regenerate competitive cricket in state schools across England and Wales. And the way it works is clubs are selected by county boards as sort of being able to facilitate Chance to Shine, and they are given funding to fund their own club coaches to go into local state schools, primary and secondary, to provide cricket sessions in the schools, and also to kind of give teachers ideas about how to do cricket sessions, and hopefully sort of change perceptions of teachers that cricket is actually quite a sort of a quick, easy, fun game to play that they don't need loads of equipment for, and they don't need sort of loads of expertise for. And then the hope is that children will enjoy the sessions from the club coaches, and they'll go back into the cricket club and sort of continue their cricket from there, really. We coached our millionth child last year, so that was a really big landmark for us. And yeah, it's a charitable campaign, and it costs £15 for one child to have Chance Shine coaching for the whole sort of summer. So it's very sort of cost effective, and the results that we see, both sort of socially, sort of educationally, and as well as sort of physical, and children sort of going on to play at a higher level, are so rewarding.
Yeah, I think possibly the people listening to this can sort of take for granted the benefits of playing cricket. But how do you see it? How do you sell it almost to children and teachers who are not necessarily engaged in the game?
Well, I think for children, cricket is a great game. The reason I started playing cricket is I loved all sports, but I loved the fact that in cricket you could do lots of different elements of lots of sports. So you could hit a ball, you could catch a ball, you could throw a ball, you could run, you could bowl. There were so many different elements of it that that's what I really loved, and that's kind of one of the ways in which it appeals to children. And also, there's lots of different versions of the game now. Obviously, you don't have to kind of play a really long form of a game. There's loads of different sort of variations that are used in schools. So it engages children that kind of had perceptions of it being a bit long and boring and technical, and they could have lots of fun just hitting lots of balls, throwing lots of balls, chasing after lots of balls. And then I suppose for teachers and parents and sort of adults, I think cricket is it's a real gentleman's sport, and I think you have to behave in a certain way on the pitch, and it's very, it's fiercely competitive, but it's also very respectful. We work with MCC on a special sort of MCC Spirit of Cricket campaign where we teach children about the importance of good sportsmanship and playing hard and playing fair, and still having fun. And it's really important to keep that competitive element in sport and cricket, but it's also really important to respect the opposition and the officials and all the other people that make a game happen, because obviously if you don't have opposition and you don't have a winner or a loser and you don't really have a game, so we think that's really important too. So sort of the educational and social development skills from cricket are really important to us.
Do you think that the social skills that children learn in cricket are carried over to the rest of their lives?
Oh, definitely. I think there's so much you can learn from cricket that you can take into your normal life. I think the respect for the opposition, respect for sort of authority and officials, and very much that when you're out, you don't argue about it. That's just how it is, and those are the rules, and I think it's really important. And a lot of the children that we work with, kind of children who've had behavioural problems, they've really improved their way of behaving because they realise that because cricket is so clear cut, you're either in or out, depending on what the umpire decides, and you don't argue, you just get on with it. I think a lot of children have kind of really sort of flourished with being given those boundaries that perhaps they weren't given before. It's quite a disciplined sport, and I think that's a really important social skill to learn. And a lot of what we do as well, it's opportunities for children to play sport in an evening rather than whatever else they might do hanging around in the evening. So it's something sort of positive to do with their lives. And also you make lots of friends, you meet people that you might not normally have met, and you have to get on with people you maybe wouldn't normally encounter in your everyday life, or different types of people you kind of interact with. And it's for all different cultures, and obviously girls and boys play, and different, doesn't matter your race, religion, anything like that. Everybody plays cricket, which is really great and sort of quite unique, I think, really.
I was going to ask you about girls playing, because obviously you played at the highest level in women's cricket. But traditionally, cricket has been dominated by boys, a sport dominated by boys, and still is to a certain extent. So how does cricket fit into a girl's life?
I think girls quite like cricket because there's lots of different elements to it, and it's quite a thinking game, and I think girls quite like that. And with the work that we're doing, and we actually employ 6 England women's cricketers to work on the Charts of Shine campaign, and they go into schools with a sort of specific brief of trying to engage more girls in cricket. And girls now are realising that it's a sport that they can play. I think it's been well documented that Charlotte Edwards, the England captain, when she grew up playing cricket, she had no idea that there was a women's team. Her sort of ambition was to play for the England men's team.
Yeah.
And then when she got a bit older, she realised there was a women's team, and obviously she got selected for that. So I think now there's much more awareness of the fact that there is a women's team for girls to sort of aspire to reach. And I think it doesn't really matter whether you're a boy or a girl. I think especially when you're at primary school, you're a very similar level. You're obviously similar size. So there's not that kind of physical discrepancy, I suppose, between the two genders. So I think definitely primary school, if girls start playing cricket then they can very much match the boys up until kind of there's a real change in size and sort of strength.
Well, it's a lofty ambition you've got trying to get cricket into state schools, but I think everyone listening to this who loves the game will back you all the way. So if anyone wants to find out more about the Chance to Shine organisation, where can they go? Is there a website?
Yes, the website is www.chancetoshine.org. And I'm sure there's lots of people who've been positively affected by cricket, and we're very much kind of wanting to appeal to those kind of people that maybe want to donate to try and give more children the opportunity to have the chance to play cricket.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, so you can get that anytime you like from pitchvision.com. But for now, Rosalie Birch, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's the questions section on the show now, and yet again the post bag has been handed to Richard, and he's going to be looking in there right now to see if he can find a couple of questions that have the chance to win a prize, which is a coaching course delivered online courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. You can go to pitchvision.com/academy and have a little look at the type of things that are offer there, online videos and other goodies for you to have. So Richard, what questions have we got this week?
Yes, David, Russell in the mailbag. We have a letter here from, he doesn't have a name, PV Novotny. I hope I've definitely said that wrong. But anyway, the question is, I've been told that my line length and flight are very good, but my pace is a bit too slow. I've brought the pace up a bit, but not as much as I would like. Is there any drill or exercises that will help build pace? If I could add more pace to my spin bowling, I think I would be more of a tack bowler than a defensive bowler. Okay, so he's a spin bowler wanting a little bit more pace. So not the usual question of a pace bowler wanting more pace, it's a spin bowler wanting more pace.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question, actually, because there's often talk, if you talk to professional spinners, they, you know, playing the first class game or professional game, they will talk about bowling at a first class pace, which is slightly quicker than the pace you see generally at club level, which tends to be a little bit slower, a little bit loopier. So there's definitely a place for bowling with speed relative quick for as a spin bowler. So it's a good question. But the key really is that what you don't want to be doing is focusing so much on getting faster that you just end up firing it in and you're not giving the ball a rip anymore, because the first thing you want to do as a spin bowler is generate as much power in the ball to give you revolutions rather than a power in the ball to get the ball down the other end quickly. So the key, I think, to being able to do that is to break it down into two is break it down into two steps. The first is they both involve just going to the nets and doing a lot of work. There's no way around that. The first step is to work on increasing your pace without caring where the ball's going. You can bowl all over the shop, horribly inaccurate, but what you're really trying to do is get it so that you're firing the ball a little bit quicker, but you're still making sure that you give the ball as many revolutions as you can get on it. It's usually a matter of when you see a club spinner, what you tend to see is that he leaves his hit behind from a technical point of view. He's leaving his hit behind, and by that I mean he's not driving his hip through at the same time as the arm's coming over. The hip, there's a slight delay. And the arm comes over, then the hip comes through. So it's the timing of the coordination of the body is slightly out. So the feeling that you want is that when you get to your the actual point of release, your hip is driving through as powerfully as your arm is flicking, so you can put the revolutions on the ball. So that's what you need to work on there. And what you'll find is when you're doing that, you're going to spray it around all over the place. You might put it in the side netting, bowl horrible full tosses, but you want to get to the nets for the bag of balls and do that completely on your own. That's step one. And then step two is set down a target. You can use pitch vision to help you with this, of course, which Richard, I'm sure you're behind that idea. And
Definitely.
then gradually try and start hitting that target at your new pace. And you can do that from, say, 16 yards to start with to make it easier. And then gradually, as you are hitting the target more and more regularly, just go back a yard at a time until you're back to 22. So then when you're at 22, you're firing in, you're giving it lots of revolutions on the ball. So you're not compromising spin with pace. And you're at the, what the first class players consider to be first class spin pace.
Yeah, building up a bit of muscle memory as you do it and everything. I mean, it's not unlike a tennis player practicing their first serve, is it? He'll stand there with a bucket of balls and belt the life out of that thing, and then slowly build the control back in to get it to the in get that serve in place. But he's building up his speed. He works from speed first, and then he goes to accuracy, not the other way around.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, and there's no reason why you can't do both. It's a common thing that Ian Ponce says to fast bowlers is that if someone ever tells you to slow down to be more accurate, then they're giving you duff information, because all the traits of bowling faster are also all the traits of bowling accurate. So you don't need to slow down to bowl fast. You just need to make sure that your action is good, and the way you do that is to build the muscle memory into different ways. So it's a simple procedure, but it's not an easy procedure. It takes a lot of time to get right. You can't go down to your club nets when you've got a batsman in the net and suddenly start bowling a load of long hops and full tosses and putting it in the side netting. They're not going to be very impressed with that. So you've got to do it on your own, and you've got to do it until you're really bored of it, and then you've got to do it some more. But I know it's Paul who is a regular emailer, and I'm sure he is happy to put in the work if he knows that he's going to get results from the end of it. So keep working on it, and get yourself a pitch vision system while you're at it.
Yeah, that's probably the quickest way for you, Paul, actually, I have to say. Okay, so no pain, no gain, and the good idea is to just get away where no one can see you, so you don't feel ashamed of how bad you are to begin with, and you will improve.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Question two for this week, David. This one comes from Nishad from Sri Lanka.
Oh, yes.
Nishad says, I want to bowl like Malinga. I want to bowl with a slinging action like Malinga. but I cannot find anyone who will coach this technique. What can I do?
Well, that is an interesting question because, of course, the sling action, the Malinga, the Jeff Thompson style sling, is pretty effective when done correctly. The question for me is, because it's never really been gone into any coaching books or anything like that, is how do we define? We all know what one looks like when we see it, but how do we define it in technical terms? What's the technical difference between your classical Dennis Lilly, Fred Truman side-on bowling action and the Jeff Thompson Malinga style bowling
action? It is pretty well. When you mention it, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? It isn't in any coaching manual. I mean, it's for those who can master it. It's proven to be a devastating form of bowling action.
Mm.
For as devastating as it is, it's absolutely amazing. Not more players adopt it. Well, probably those who do get it drummed out of them. But it's a legitimate way of bowling.
We still look slightly funny at someone who bowls front on. So,
yeah.
Well, that's an unusual action you've got there, bowling front on. Well, no, not really. But I think the slingy action's a long way behind. Maybe because it's rare, people think, well, it can't be copied. But there's no reason why it can't be copied as far as I know.
Well, it must have a technique like any other bowling actions or any other skill. So no one – I mean, I think it's obviously the book that's waiting to be written, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
How to – the technique for sling bowling action.
So, I mean, as far as I can see, the key difference with the sling, I mean, if we take out the low arm, the thing is with Malinga is he's got a very low arm.
Lower than Jeff Thompson's arm, much lower.
Yeah, much lower. Jeff Thompson had a pretty high arm, actually.
He did.
So we have to take that out of the equation. We know that's not part of the slingy action. That's just part of Malinga's action. So if we take out the fact that the arm is low, so what is the other part of it that makes it slingy? And I think it is the greater separation, because we've talked about this last week with the mobility of the thoracic spine. If you were listening to last week's show, you'll know what I was talking about there. The greater separation between the hip and the shoulder, the longer the delay between the hip coming through and the bowling arm coming through. So there's kind of a, so then it becomes a lot more of a sling. The longer that delay is, the more it looks like a sling to someone who's watching from the sidelines.
Well, and if you want to visualize that, perhaps you could make a reference there to Sean Tate's bowling action, because even though it's not a classic slinging action, the way he arches his back and bows his back, really, and that delay between hip and arm, mm-hmm. is almost the same as the slinging action there. He just converts it into a more conventional action, but it's almost the same biomechanics at work through the back. The energy there is transferred through the back,
yeah, definitely,
and the torso in that action.
It's like an elastic band. I've used this analogy a lot, but it's like an elastic band. You know, the at that if you pause the slinging action as the bowling arm is just starting to come round, you'll see the hip quite a long way forward, the shoulder a very, very long way back. I'm talking about, say, on the right-hand bowler, the right-handed side, a very, very long way back. And so that's the elastic band stretched as far as it will go. And then as the arm comes round, the band snaps back into place. And that generates huge power.
So to answer Nishad's question, I mean, how does an aspiring slinger get coached? How do they learn this if other than teaching themselves?
To give a little plug to our fast bowling coach Ian Pont, he's very good at making the most of that stretch reflex moment. So perhaps it wouldn't look exactly like Malinga when you're finished, but you'd certainly have that big stretch contract that makes Malinga such a fast and effective bowler. There's a very simple little drill that you could do, actually, which is to get a probably the best way to do it is do it with a partner. get a partner to stand behind you and holding a stump in both hands, and you grab onto the stump, and then you get yourself into your bowling action position with your front foot braced, you know, at the just before the point of delivery, basically, and then bring your hip as far around as it will go, keeping your back arm straight. So if you think you're frozen in your bowling action, but you're stretching as much as you can to get that feel for what it feels like at the point of, or just before the point of delivery, when you're stretching your pec and your back as much as you can to get your shoulder as far back as possible with your hip as far forward as possible. You get that, once you get that stretch feeling, then you can take that to going out into the net. So that's a really simple drill that you can do that will help with that. I mean, it's not the complete answer, of course it isn't.
No, I think we have to probably wrap up the answer by saying, putting out an appeal to any coach out there listening who actually can coach it, and get in touch with us, because we'd love to hear your insights.
Yeah,
Love to document. We'd love to see it documented somewhere. There must be a manual for it. There should be a manual for it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get all the questions of what age, you know, because if you're coaching that as a basic action to people, you know, when can you start doing that? Can you start coaching a slingy action to 6-year-olds? Well, you know, there's no reason why not, I suppose.
Mm.
So yeah, it gets quite interesting then, doesn't it? So if anyone's out there doing it, you know, they've got a 6-year-old who had a little bit of a sling in their action, and they encouraged it rather than coached it out of them. What happened next?
Exactly.
So yeah, that'd be an interesting one. Get in touch with us.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear that story.
We've come to an end to this week's show, and I think now that you're a regular contributor, I think we need a pseudonym for you to keep you up with burners.
Yeah, and then I can say controversial things without being called to account.
Exactly. So what do you think? What are we going to call you? The chief or the skipper? The boss, perhaps?
I'll go with the boss.
The boss, yeah. Well, I think so. I mean, it's suitably grand, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it strokes my ego.
Yeah, precisely. And as your first role as the boss, we need to decide who the lucky winner is for this week's competition for a coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. So which question did you prefer the most this week?
Well, I think I, now that I have a moniker, I can be controversial. I'm going to break with convention here. I'm not going to give the prize for the best question. I'm going to give the prize for our failure to give an answer, which is how can you find someone to coach you for sling bowling actions? And we can't answer that, so we fail. Therefore, Nishad, this week you get the prize.
Congratulations, Nishad. I'm sure it's going to help you become a super fast bowler. If you maybe speak to Ian Pont, then maybe he can do something for you. Don't forget that you have your chance to win a prize every week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show just by entering your question into us. And if it's the best question of the week, chosen by the boss or chosen by Berners, then you do win an online coaching course at the Pitch Vision Academy. So how do you get in touch with us, boss?
If you're in the UK, it's 0208 816 7691. If you're in Australia, North America, or elsewhere in the world, there are international numbers on the website, and with the same answering machine, please call in. Or you can email to David on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed you can. And you can also get in touch with us through the 140-character glory of Twitter. We're at PV Cricket Coach there. And if you go onto Facebook, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, we are able to take your questions through the Pitch Vision Academy page there. And while you're there, why not click on like. You can subscribe to us in iTunes as well. If you go over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. There we are. You can get all the back episodes if you've missed any of them. And there's a couple of ones we mentioned on this week's show. And if you don't have iTunes, you can still subscribe to us. If you go to pitchvision.com, you can get all the details there. That's all we have for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.